Hi, you can hear us, right? Awesome. Welcome to our talk here. I'm Özgür Kesim with from the GNU Tata team and also from the company Code Blau.
And I'm Nikolai. I'm working here at TU Dresden and also working with the GNU Tata.
Yes, and we want to sort of help you, help us as well, understand the digital euro. The ideas that the European Central Bank has, and this is based on the FAQ that they put out with questions and answers. Maybe we should start with some very basic questions one might ask. Hi, I'm your ECB FAQ bot for the digital euro. How can I help you?
What is the digital euro?
Well, the answer to that question does not exist in the system.
What is the ECB?
The answer to that question is in a different FAQ.
And what is money?
Well, maybe we should start with some basic facts as an introduction to the data stage. What is actually money, at least from our standpoints? By the way, we are not economists, we are not financial people. This is very basic knowledge, but something worth for the terminology. What is money? What is a bank, a central bank in its role, and what trust has to do with that? The definition that you can find, for instance, at the US Treasury about what money is as follows. Money has the following three core functions. It is a unit of account for pricing. That's obvious. That's what you find if you go shopping. You find the price tag with the amount and the currency. It is the medium of exchange when we do payments. That's what we give. That's the money. But it's also a store of value to preserve value over time. That's also a function of it. And all these three combined is that what we essentially mean by money. But they are also sort of independent from each other. You could easily imagine, for instance, for store of value, imagine I have a picture, a famous picture from Van Gogh. You could think of it like a store of value. This is a valuable thing that will remain valuable for over time, but it's certainly not the medium of exchange, and I will not give my price in like a tenth of a Van Gogh picture or so. So these three properties need to be together, and we call money a currency when it is issued by a central bank or by a government. That's money. Now, one essential aspect of modern money, the current ways that we have, we use these pieces of paper, for instance, and what they represent is a liability of a national bank to the owner of this piece of paper. It basically says, whoever owns this piece of paper, the national bank owes the owner of this note 10 euros, for instance. And the way that we pay is actually by passing on these pieces of paper. That's what we call payment. And basically, we are passing on liabilities. And something which is underneath all that is that this only works based on the trust that we have in this, not only the system, like trusting the particular coin or the note, but also between us. I trust you to believe in the same way that I believe in the thing, otherwise this wouldn't work. So trust is the foundation of this abstract concept of liability for money. In this context, the ECB is very central. The European Central Bank itself, what is it? It's a European institution. It's the only institution that is authorized to issue the euro, which is our currency in the Eurozone. And it is given a mandate to do this by the member states and by the national banks that existed prior to that. It has a very tight rule under which it can operate, so there are laws that say what it can do and what it cannot do. But outside of that, or based on these rules, other than that, it acts independently. It's not underneath any, like, a government cannot tell it what to do. that how this acts. And there are basically two responsibilities of the ECB. One is to ensure price stability. When I buy today for 1 euro this thing, I expect it to have the same price the next day. And the other one is to ensure the trust in the euro, which sounds a bit weird when you know, this sounds like a faith in the thing, but it is really, really fundamental. If you think of a country with high inflation, I know, for instance, in Turkey, where since a couple of years there's very high inflation, you will find prices are given in Turkish lira, for instance, but many companies pay their salaries in dollars. So that's the aspect of why trust is essential here, and also price stability, of course. Having said that, it's also important for what comes next and generally for understanding the whole system. There are, in a sense, at least two incarnations of money. And you see in the upper part here, the golden thing, this is the ECB or a national bank. Here we have other commercial banks underneath, and they do some sort of money transaction underneath, like credit and different account balances, settlements, and so on. This upper portion of the movement or the money involved there, it's called wholesale money. That's what that's a terminology used there. And it is worth mentioning that up here, this is already digital. No bank is moving like paper money between banks or so. This is a digital world already. And then we have the under this dotted line, that's the realm of the so-called retail money. That's everything that faces us as citizens. This is where, on the left side, you see the ATM machine where we go and get our real cash money in our hands and then can use it for buying or between people. And here on the right side, this is also part of the retail money, but it's already digital. This is where we interact with our bank account and make transactions and so on. But still, this is all, because it's interacting with normal citizens, that's called retail money. The idea, the new kit in the field here, in the block, is the CBDC, the Central Bank Digital Currency. And all it adds, if I go back to the slide before, if you see the difference, it's sort of a notion, some sort of a digital form of money, where here down below I can transact digitally from one person to another or to the merchant in digital form, something that resembles the same notion of retail money. What is not so clear, and something that we will investigate further on, is how exactly is this sort of realized? There could be, you know, the idea of this digitalization of money can be realized in multiple forms. Does it come from a normal bank, the digital stuff? Does it come directly from the central bank and so on? Those are questions that we try to find the answers for. So, digital euro, what is it? Hi, how can I help you?
Why does Europe need the digital euro?
Easy. The use of cash is in decline. A digital euro makes digital payments possible, will be risk-free, free of charge, will make us sovereign and resilient.
And what would happen without it?
That's actually a good question. If we take the last point, for instance, sovereignty and resilience, that sounds like, you know, would we be not resilient without the digital euro? It's a strange way to phrase it. And another aspect that you realize when you read the FAQ is it is clear that the digital CBDC will become a prime focus, a target for cyber attacks. The central bank claims that this is like not going to happen, sort of. That's what you can read out of the FAQ. And another aspect that they are not very keen on or pointing out is this all, this digital kind of digital euro would depend on a functioning electronic infrastructure that is there. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. So the notion of we are getting more resilient and more sovereign is sort of not true. Another thing which they point out in the FAQ is they claim this will be risk-free. And they are not pointing at all at these lists that are just, you know, present in any money system. These are operational and technology risks. You know, the choices of technology, just operating the stuff, things can go wrong. Fraud and security can be part of the system. Those risks exist. And if you introduce a new system, those risks will show up. The same with liquidity, credit, and settlement. This is about the money flow. Arbitrage risks, this is about getting advantage of some, let's say, timing delays or whatever to increase the money that you have. Third-party risks, your dependency on other institutions to function properly. And privacy breach risks if you deal with data of people. So all these risks should be obvious, but the ECB is not transparent about not even mentioning that these risks will there and how to get rid of them or contain them. And something, if all these risks are not taken care of, there's an additional risk of losing the public trust in this context, which is a substantial risk. If we remember, trust is a very fundamental thing in the whole money system that we rely on. Now, how can I help you?
Why would people want to use the digital euro?
Because it's amazing. Universally accepted across the Eurozone, online and offline available, has top-notch privacy and traceable payments. It's safe, accessible, and financially inclusive. Mandatory for merchants to accept, distributed by banks via legislation.
Oh, really? And how exactly does it work?
It turns out this question is not really answered. Well, kind of. Let's try again. Hi, how can I help you?
How would the digital euro work?
I'm glad you asked. It enables instant cross-border provider payments. In-store, online, peer-to-peer. Wallet set up via bank or post office, funded by a bank account or cash with balance limits, guarantees safe, instant transactions and cash-like anonymity in offline use.
Okay, but how exactly?
Well, and this is actually not answered in the FAQ at all. It took us and other people that we worked together on this substantial time to extract information based on progress reports that the ECB made during the start to understand what is going on. Something that Mikolaj will tell you because it was not available in the FAQ.
Okay, so we had a look at a lot of different documents, progress reports by the ECB to kind of get a grasp on what they actually plan to do. And that's our small overview of how the digital euro would look like.
Easy.
It's kind of the smallest thing we could manage to where we had everything in one image. First thing you will notice, there is actually the European Central Bank in the middle as the central provider of trust and as also the central authority for settlement and for fraud protection. And you will notice there are two separate parts, basically. So what the ECB calls the digital euro is actually two different, completely different technologies underneath. And one of them is the online version, and one of them is the offline version. We'll go through them one by one right now. So let's first look at the online version. The very first step, which is actually not shown on this image, is that you would need to follow a process that is called onboarding. So at some point, you as an end user who wants to use the digital euro would have to open a so-called digital euro account. So the digital euro account is supposed to lie at or is supposed to be offered by so-called payment system providers, or PSPs for short. And those could be banks, but they also could be some other companies that are somehow supervised by the ECB to run such digital euro accounts. For this onboarding, both the consumer and also the business side who wants to use the digital euro need to follow some kind of know your customer. So they have to reveal their identity to be able to have the account at the payment service provider, and the account will then be bound to that identity. Now, on the consumer side, it will be possible to link your commercial bank account, like your normal bank account that you have, to this digital euro account. On the business side, this linking is actually mandatory. So here, it is clear that every business that has a digital euro account also would need a commercial bank account linked. And I will tell you in some minutes why this is the case. When you want to start a payment in this online digital euro system, well, the flow would start with a business who hands out payments instructions, basically telling, okay, this is the business digital euro account where you should pay and how much you should pay. The consumer will pass this on to their digital euro account or the payment service provider who holds their digital euro account. In that moment, it's obviously identifiable that the consumer is, or who the consumer is. The payment service provider will then check if there is enough money on the digital euro account. If not, it will deny the transaction. Or if the consumer has actually linked the their private money account to the digital euro account, there is a so-called reverse waterfall method that would basically just take money out of the commercial bank account and move it to the digital euro account. So if you have this linking enabled, then it's pretty straightforward. The payment service provider would just take the money from your commercial bank account, put it on your digital euro account, and then pass the transaction on to the European Central Bank. At that point, the identity information, like the PII of the consumer, is not passed on to the ECB, but every consumer and every business has a digital euro account with a unique identifier, and all these accounts and the account balances are stored at the ECB. So in the end, the ECB will be able to see all the transactions that are happening on one or the other account. If everything's all right, the ECB will confirm the transaction to the payment service provider of the business. That one will actually directly transfer the money that they get on the digital euro account to the commercial bank account of the business following the waterfall method. The other one was the reverse waterfall from commercial bank account to the digital euro account. In this case, it's the waterfall from the digital euro account to the commercial bank account. And that's because the design foresees that there will be a holding limit of 0 euros for business users. So really, any money that arrives here will be directly transferred out of the system. But then the business will eventually get the confirmation and the payment will work through. So that's kind of how the online version looks like. Now, there's some problems that maybe you even find here, and some of them we will just briefly discuss. First of them is, if you have your commercial bank account linked to your digital euro account, and for it to be like usable, the idea is that there will be no extra authorization needed to actually transfer money from the commercial bank account to your digital euro one, which means that as soon as someone got access to your digital euro account, they actually also have access to your commercial bank account. So this is the first risk that is like really new in this system. then, I mean, you saw the picture before. It's kind of complex system. We have to move money into the system, maybe automatically. Then we move it over, and then we move it out again. And it's not really clear what this is actually good for. We will talk about that in some slides again. And as already hinted at, whenever you have a transaction that is passed on from the payment service provider to the ECB, there will be a unique account identifier for the digital euro account. So there is no anonymity at all towards the ECB. There is, at best, pseudonymity. So just an identifier instead of the name of the person. And at the same time, all the transactions will pass through the central database at the European Central Bank. So they are able to basically monitor all the transactions that happen. Now, on the payment service provider side, there's also some problem, which is that they allow them to charge fees to business users, not to end users, not to consumers, but to business users. But for those fees, they implement a fee cap. And that kind of works against the goal of having a wide variety of payment service providers, because this basically favors all those that are already on the market and already have the information of customers, of businesses, that they can just reuse for the digital euro, and smaller players or newer players will have a really hard time to get into the market. And then last but not least, I already mentioned the holding limit of 0 euros at the business side. They are also discussing a holding limit of currently 3,000 euro at the consumer side. And that is meant, or the idea there is that they want to safeguard against people just moving all their money from the commercial bank system that is out there, and that is basically the basis for our financial system, to the digital euro account. And that's why they have the holding limit. But that in turn means that if you have transactions higher than that, for example, you have to link your bank account, otherwise it's not possible to do them via this system. And last but not least, on the business side, it's also not really clear, or what is clear is that there will be mandatory acceptance throughout the whole Eurozone, so every merchant, every shop has to accept digital euro, except some small exceptions, like very small companies or something like that. But it's not really clear who will pay for the additional cost that this incurs. We will also talk about that in a minute. Okay, so that was the online part. Kind of easy, right? Offline now. This is, as said already, is a very different system. This is supposed to work when you're disconnected from the internet. In that case, you don't use directly digital, like an account, like you do in the online version, but you have some kind of tokens that you would store on your end user device. Obviously, that means that you first have to get those tokens, and this must happen while you're still connected. So this must always happen before. There cannot be any like automatic linking or like automatic transfer from your bank account, right? But then as soon as you have those tokens, you can disconnect from the internet, pass them on to other people. And it's explicitly mentioned in the reports that this part is meant to be fully anonymous, so there's no tracing of the transaction included, and it's also transitively anonymous. So you can give on your token to someone, and then this person can give on the token to someone else. Basically, whenever someone then later becomes connected again to the internet, it will use this token, go to their payment service provider, which then in turn go to the ECB, to get the money paid out. So here there's several problems. Maybe minor one is that the holding limit in this case is very unclear, because in the online case there was a holding limit of zero euros for businesses. That's clearly not possible in an disconnected scenario, because then basically the business would not be able to accept any transactions anymore. So this is an open question. But the much bigger problem is the problem of double spending. So here we have these two elderly people, which look very nice, but maybe they're actually former professors of cryptography or some hardware electronics things, and they are able to break the secure hardware that is supposed to safeguard the tokens from someone and make sure that they cannot be copied. And if they manage to do so, then they can, in a disconnected scenario, just pass this token on to several people, and then whoever comes online first of those recipients will be able to get the money paid out. All the others will have bad luck. And as hardware, as history has shown, these secure hardwares have been broken all over the time again. So it's kind of foreseeable that this would also happen with the offline digital euro. And it's actually not clear what happens, who is liable in that case. Is it the business? Is it the payment service provider? Is it the ECB? Who will bear the costs if that happens? And one more thing, it could also be that this is actually not a malicious hacker that is trying to double spend, but it could even be just a bug in the software implementation that somehow leads to spending tokens several times. And if that is the same software that runs on all the devices, then this could also be a big problem. And last but not least, there's also the problem that secure hardware, which this would be based on, is only available from non-European hardware manufacturers, so that would mean another dependence actually on non-European companies. And one of the goals of the digital euro was to be self-sufficient and not depend on other people. So this was my short overview of the digital euro design. Here we have everything together with all the problems, and I think with that we can try to find some more answers.
Let's try. So as the summary of the issues that we found so far, many risks are not fully addressed in what we've seen. We have arbitrary holding limits, privacy requirements are violated, definitely in the online version. There's complexity on top of existing systems. The secure offline version is actually technically infeasible, and it relies on non-European phone and hardware manufacturers. But you might ask, well, maybe there's some benefits still in the system. We might change aspects of it, but who's benefiting from that? Let's ask. Hi, how can I help you?
What value would the digital euro bring to merchants?
Huge value. Because it's easier and cheaper as an alternative to other payment methods. More conversion, meaning more usage of or more actual payment interactions, means more revenue, and instant payments.
I see, but what about the integration costs?
Well, it turns out there is a burden on the merchants because mandatory acceptance requires integration of the digital euro into the system. And integration requires software and IT stuff, and also hardware maybe. And this will not be cheap for the merchants. It will not be for free, clearly, and it will not be cheap, and it will not be able to be kept cheap. So, and the other thing, as you had mentioned before, it's also not clear what happens in cases of double spending, who is paying for that. So that's the merchant side. Hi, how can I help you?
So what value would it bring to intermediaries, like payment system providers?
Quite some. They deal with customers and merchants, have reach throughout the EU area. More business opportunities, also external businesses, are incentivized by a compensation model.
And how exactly are these added value?
Yes, that's a fair question. It's not clear why would anybody, what benefit comes out of it. So far, we can say the digital euro design leaves the legal and financial liabilities unclear, lacks well-specified economic incentives for the operators, and actually fails to identify its benefits for the society. So where is the project then right now? Hi, how can I help you?
Where does the project currently stand?
Up and up and up. So there was a 2-year investigation phase, which ended in 2023. And then it moved on into a preparation phase in which we still are, extensive analysis, testing, experimentation, and by the end of this year, it is planned to make a decision if this is should be ongoing. By decision, meaning that the European Parliament, the European Commission will give its go, and the Parliament.
And during all this process, which experts were consulted?
Well, it was a challenging thing to get even information out of the system, and it turns out a lot of experts were ignored. We can talk about that later. Here's our conclusion. The current design of the digital euro, in its online version, doesn't meet the privacy demands that society clearly has expressed. Citizens were asked and they want anonymity, strong anonymity. In the offline version, it's technically actually infeasible to be, you know, reliable to implement. It leaves legal and financial liabilities unclear, lacks well-specified incentives for operators, and fails to identify the benefits for the society. And if anything goes wrong, the ECB actually risks its reputation, and the reputation is important because the trust in the euro depends on that. That's a big gamble that the ECB is set out to do right now. We come closer to the end. Hi, how can I help you?
Would a digital euro replace cash?
No. It would complement cash, not replace it. Cash would continue to be available, as would other means of payment.
Ah, phew. But why so many woulds?
Yeah, that's interesting that the answers contain would, not will. Now that we understand what the digital euro, the shortcomings of it, maybe let's look at the horizon, a potential better future. The current landscape that we have in the payment world right now, there's no privacy-preserving, practical, taxable, and digital payment system available for the euro in the eurozone. Here's an interesting thing I want to point out. A recent discovery by an economist from Canada, I believe, Catherine Tin, in this year, analyzed from an economist standpoint the current set or different sets of CBDC designs from the perspective of an economist investigating what benefit would different forms of privacy provide for society, for different players, and so on. And she took this from a game theoretical approach, made models, calculated, and her conclusion is, this is a quote, "My model shows that asymmetric privacy would enable the government to set lower taxes while delivering the same level of public goods than it would under symmetrical non-privacy or symmetrical privacy." That's quite a mouthful, but the interesting aspect is she highlights the winner in all the models that she had is the asymmetric privacy thing. So a payment system that could offer that would be great. What could be such a payment system? Well, turns out GNU/TALA is a payment system with asymmetric symmetry. And it is already available in Switzerland. You can actually get your Swiss francs digitally by this payment service provider. That's available now. We are waiting for merchants to adopt. It will soon become available in Germany for the euro via the GLS bank that we are working with. And also in Hungary for the foreign, with the Magnet Bank that we are working together with. So there's hope. That's the horizon. And for those, we are not going to give a talk about TALA, but if you're interested, there was a wonderful talk with an introduction into TALA earlier this year from Ivan. If you want to learn more about TALA, just please check out the recordings of his. Last but not least, our acknowledgements. This whole thing was sponsored by the Federal Ministry of Research, Technology and Space, and also by the NGI Thaler project, which will make Thaler a reality in the Eurozone. Thank you. And if you have questions and are interested in the extended version, this is the website to go. It's called FQA, Frequently Questioned Answers, -teuro.eu. You can find that. It's an ongoing document. It's not in the most beautiful state right now, but you can find more information there. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your talk. Here's the first question.
Thank you very much for your talk. What does asymmetric privacy mean?
Asymmetric privacy?
Yes.
Do you want that?
Please go.
Okay. In this context, it means that if you take cache, for instance, that's an example for like symmetric anonymity. Both sides are anonymous. The one who has the cache and give it to the other one, both sides are not known to anybody else or don't need to be known. The Thaler system is one where the person who pays remains anonymous in that transaction, but the entity that receives is known to the system, is guaranteed to be known in the system. This enables enforcement of things like taxability. So if it's necessary to investigate criminal affairs, tax avoidance, evasion, and so on, this can be done. So this side is not anonymous. But if you have your digital coin in your wallet and you pay for something, that transaction ensures that you remain anonymous. Of course, unless you need to provide your address to the merchant so that he can send you stuff. But other than that, the payment service provider doesn't learn anything about you. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so thank you for the nice dissection of the digital euro. I guess at the central bank, they have really smart people working there. So what do you think is the motivation for this push towards the digital euro? Is it malice? Is it incompetence, corruption, whatever?
Those are big words. It's always difficult to tell, I guess, from the outside. I think in the moment where this all started was around 2019, and that was basically the time when Facebook or Meta came around and said we are going to offer Libra as a worldwide payment system, currency, something, and that was the time where a lot of central banks actually looked into how they could offer something that would ensure that people would still use central bank provided money in the future. And I think that's where it all started from, and why they went in that direction where they went to, I cannot say.
Yeah, maybe to be fair to the ECB, for instance, the requirement for offline payments, that was something that the Commission, the European Commission, wanted them to do. That was like, and also it sounds like good, but we have strong theoretical evidence, things that we haven't mentioned, like the CUP theorem. This is not really possible. You cannot have good things in this area. But so far they have ignored that. Why they have ignored that, we don't know. They're probably... there's some money behind incentives to have selling hardware, I suppose, but that's all I can say to that.
Thank you for your talk. My question was, you mentioned for the offline part of the system that there is a special secure hardware to operate that. Honestly, for me, it's the first time I heard of this secure hardware, because I think digital euro implies that you only have a piece of software, an app or something, so maybe you can elaborate on that. What is the specific hardware part that is not present in the online kind of circuit? Thank you.
Yeah, so I mean, they know that there is the problem that digital things can be copied very easily, like Control-Z, Control-V, and that's it. They know that, so their solution is they would put this information that is basically the token, the which has the value, into a secure hardware or some part of the hardware that is separate from the rest of the operating system and the rest of the environment where the software is running on, so that a software itself is not able to access this information. And it actually works out quite well. This is already used in a lot of different things. I mean, I think SIM cards, they also have some kind of secure enclave things. But here's the problem. As soon as you have something in your hands and you have physical access to it and you are the one who wants to attack it, then history has shown it's possible. It has always been possible for now.
Maybe to add to that, you described how the what the function is. Maybe for you to understand that current hardware already has that in the chip, like ARM and Intel are providing chips which contain a so-called secure element that has this purpose. There's a very specific interface where you can sort of put code into it, and it will run independently, and you cannot access it anymore other than getting output from it. But you cannot alter the running software. This is a concept that already exists for quite some time. That was the timeline, and is already in use in iPhones, in Androids, and so on, depending on the version or the generation that you have. This is already existing technology that is used by software, but it is also technology that was proven to be.
But it is usually used, I mean, they use it now for Android phones, they use it to store your credit card credentials, for example. But this is not information that you, as the owner of the device, would want to get out of the secure hardware because you know it already. You are the owner of the credit card anyway. But here's the difference. Here is something that they want to protect from you as the owner of the hardware. And that's where things get complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering, was there anything in the FAQs about adoption rates? Because if they say it wouldn't replace cash, the first thing which came to my mind was this little thingy you had on the EC cards, those little golden chips, which are not there any longer, which was also like, hey, you have those cash cards and you can pay basically, I remember, like tram tickets and cigarettes with that, and that's about it.
So there are no real answers to that other than you can judge from their statement. The mandatory use from merchants means there will not be a demand or supply problem. Because once people have money, they can use it because they are mandatory to be accepted. So that's different from other systems, maybe. Other than that, they certainly don't know. And the FAQ, other places do not tell you much about what are expected acceptance rates or what. And from how I read it, it's not even clear that the ECB is convinced that this all will work out or will continue or not. This is not clear.
There are two more questions. If you answer quickly, we can get both of them.
Sure.
So if I'm running like a festival or something on a remote airfield and there's no internet connection, does the offline version, which I might be required to like have customers give customers access to, does it work like really offline, or does the like the commercial side still need to be online for that?
So this was a question about the digital euro design, or? Yes.
Yeah.
So in their design, it is possible without an internet connection on both sides. And then eventually someone will connect again. And that's the point in time when they would check or would basically go to the ECB and say, OK, I have this token. I want this money be paid out.
And when we say offline, it is probably meant offline from internet. But it might be that they communicate with NFC or so for the actual payment. So there's some sort of transaction obviously going on, but it's offline from internet.
Do you foresee, or how does it relate to Vero? And do you foresee it could eventually replace the online version?
I'm sorry, I did not get the
Vero,
question.
Vero. Does it relate? Do you foresee that?
The Vero. Ah, now I got you. Oh, that's a very good point, actually. So one of the critiques that you, or in the more detailed explanation on the website, is why is the ECB doing all this work, so to speak? Couldn't the banks come up with a better solution, just offering something to the public that serves all the purpose? You can say, for instance, we now have in the EU a mandatory instant payment available from bank to bank. So couldn't the Commission or the Parliament just demand from banks better service, so to speak? Of course, and that's one possible alternative. And in a sense, GNU-Thaler is trying to step in there with the GLS Bank and say, here, this is a private company, the GLS Bank, but it is offering a service to the all of society and businesses. And offers basically the same kind of convenience that we want. Online payments, digital payments, peer-to-peer payments, but with the added benefit of really being anonymous for the people who buy. Yeah.
So let's thank the speakers again, please.
Cool.